Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Good. Well, we have a great guest for today's show. Today is Thursday, October 29th. It's 2 o'clock Eastern time, so if you're listening now, thank you so much for joining us live. And today we have Ashley Ward, who's curriculum director at the Meredith Dunn School here in Louisville. And we've already just been in a giggle fest for about the 2 minutes before the show, so I hope we can hold it together here today to sound semi-professional anyway and talk about academic problems that children with language delays may go on to have once they start kindergarten, first grade, and really, again, kind of the bulk of their formal education. And so I'm just going to let Ashley go ahead and kind of introduce herself and tell us about her school and what they do and just anything else she wants to say. Ashley's a talker like me, so we should have no problem at all.
I could tell from her giggling we were going to stretch this for an hour pretty easily. Yeah, and I said up front, Meredith Dunn is the place that, as a mother and a therapist, I've heard about, but really I don't know that much about it, so I have legitimate questions, and I think it'll be, you know, beneficial for listeners who have kids who are in school-age kids and dealing with, you know, issues and things that come along as your kids are in school. And so it'll be fun to have somebody who's in the trenches in the school system or in a school, and she can enlighten us as to what works with her program. So, Ashley, tell us about Meredith Dunn.
Yes. Well, thank you, Laura and Kate, and thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it. Meredith Dunn is a really neat school. We're one of a few schools in Louisville that actually work with kids with learning disabilities. So all the kids that come into our school, we're a K-8 school. We just recently added kindergarten. Our school serves kids that haven't been successful in a more typical school-like area. So the kids come to us, they might have trouble with written language, they might have trouble with decoding, reading comprehension. It might be a whole host of things, but typically they just come to us because they haven't found success in a regular school, in a regular classroom, and they either need a smaller class size or they need a teacher that actually teaches the way they specifically learn. So what we do is, typically, the school that they're at, you know, a lot of times it is Jefferson County Public Schools, a lot of times it might be a parochial school, their school will work with them to come to Meredith Dunn, and we'll do some testing, and we will identify the strengths and the weaknesses then of that child. And then when the student comes into Meredith Dunn, we'll develop a very specific program for them to meet them where they need to be as far as academics, social awareness, you know, handwriting. We have a lot of kids that just have dysgraphia and they need an occupational therapist. So we really do offer a wide array of different programs to try to serve those individual needs of the students.
So is it a private school or is it a public school?
It is a private school.
Okay.
It is a private school, and we are a part of ISACS, which is Independent Schools Association of Central States, which is, I think there's about 12 of us. We're grouped with schools like Collegiate, Kentucky Country Day, the Summit School, DePaul School, Chance. There's several of us here in the area that are a part of that, that we go through an independent schools accreditation.
Okay. And do all of your students have some sort of issue? I mean,
they do. They
okay.
do. All of our schools, and, you know, it used to be so that schools actually, or students actually had to be diagnosed with some type of learning disability. Most of our students, as far as when we get their testing in, their IQ usually is either average or above average, but they're just having some real deficits in areas of, you know, they can't learn to read. You know, a lot of our younger students, that's the real problem, is they just aren't picking up on that reading naturally. So we have very, very deliberate methods of, you know, the way we teach them to read. Some of our older students might come in with some type of math disorder. They might come in. Sometimes we just have students that come in that are excellent readers, but they have trouble with written language. So our school is small enough, and we have a small enough teacher ratio that if they are great readers but they have trouble with written language, we can group them so that we can put them in a very high academic reading group, but yet we can break down that written language component to meet them where they need to be. And then again, if they're great in math, you know, we right now have algebra classes that, you know, are taught at a ninth grade level for even some of our seventh grade students. So just because, you know, I think a lot of times there's misconceptions out there about schools for kids with learning disabilities. You know, they are very, very smart children and smart adults. It's just that they have trouble in, you know, one area, several areas, and it's just, you know, learning the strategies and learning to compensate for what's so difficult for them.
Right.
So let me ask you this, Ashley. What do some of the parents of the younger kids, when they come in, like it's a new referral and they're trying to decide if Meredith Dunn is going to be a good placement for them, what are some of the things in their histories that might be applicable to moms with toddlers and preschools right now, preschoolers right now with language delays? I mean, do you hear that oh gosh, they were late talkers or?
Yes. A lot of them were even late walkers. You know, we see a lot of that, and a lot of kids that we see will see in their history that they were a part of First Steps. You know, that they did get special services when they were younger, because it really is something that you need to meet early. And, our, you know, most parents do such a good job of getting those services when the children are very young. But if, even when they do get services, but even more when they haven't had services when they're younger, you know, we really see delays in those language skills. So, for example, when a kindergarten student is coming in, that kindergarten student should be able to focus on, you know, following those directions, standing in line, learning letters, learning sounds, shape, so many things that we think about should happen in a school environment. But those kids that have those language concerns are so overwhelmed with just trying to understand what the teacher is saying that they can't grasp, okay, this is the correct letter formation for an A, because they're lost in the directions of picking up their pencil and finding where the paper is.
Right.
So, you know, I think that a lot of times they will have seen a lot of things that, you know, we think of students just or kids picking up just on hearing it and seeing it. A lot of these students don't do that. The instruction has to be very deliberate for them.
And as people, I guess I'll speak for myself, as a person who works with just 3-year-old kids frequently who have language delays, communication delays, and perhaps other things, it's very interesting for me to hear, like, what this looks like as they get older and what I'm sure you'll get to tell us some about how you do tailor your programs to meet the special kids, kids' special needs, but also that, you know, we routinely work with kids that on one level we know they're smart, and on another level we also recognize that something is their learning patterns, their learning abilities are just different from other kids.
Exactly.
And that can be confused a lot. You know, some people think they're not smart. Some people give them, you say that they assume that they learn it from hearing it, and we recognize because we're the ones trying to really, really get it in them when they're little that doesn't always work for all kids.
And what we do is we really do look at what is the students need. And actually, I'm sure you all are familiar with Mel Levine and his trainings with the All Kinds of Minds Institute. We actually just went through the complete Schools Attuned training, and we are now one of 12 schools of distinction under that umbrella. So, which is a very intense training where you really do break down every single aspect of the student. And so then we're going to look at exactly what that student needs at home and at school to make them successful. So if it's, you know, a very kinesthetic learner and they need to be in the sand, they need to be writing on the carpet, they need to be outside with sidewalk chalk, we do that. And we give the student exactly what they need to meet those, you know, to meet those demands that is required. And, you know, a lot of that needs to be done every day. So we have an occupational therapist here on staff that will look at the students. If we know that we're having trouble with handwriting, we try to really figure out why. I think a lot of times whenever kids are having trouble with handwriting, you just think, oh, they're being lazy, their handwriting is messy. You know, we have an occupational therapist that goes
doesn't
in.
Care, he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
We hear all the same rationales for when they're little. And
And I really think about those kids that are like in fourth and fifth grade who have just been not intentionally, but they have been beaten up over and over again because their handwriting is not what other students' handwriting looks like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we go in and we really try to talk to the student. We talk to the parent about, you know what, this is not laziness. There's a reason for this, and we need to find out what the reason is and develop a plan for how we can improve this handwriting. Do we know that this is a student that is going to need to be on a laptop? You know, because we don't want the creativity to then be hindered because of that handwriting issue. So, you know, we just really try to look at every side. We also have a big social skills program here. Each student gets an hour of social skills training once a week with our certified social worker. And then we also have kids that might fit more on the spectrum that get very intense social training about how to start a conversation, how to manage a conversation, how to greet someone. So that's actually a pull-out program for those kids that need it most as well. So, you know, we really just want them to be able to eventually leave Meredith Dunn and go into a school setting that they had once come from and be very successful with all the tools that we give them.
Mm-hmm. So you have kids that kind of come in and then don't stay the full K through 8, Ashley.
Exactly.
They get in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We do. We might have a student that comes in. You know, the transition time, we see a lot of students come in at first grade that have had trouble in preschool, that probably have been in first steps, that the parents know that there's a problem. And, you know, the teacher had already told them in preschool, okay, there's going to be some issues. They're not recognizing letters. They're not recognizing sounds. So we'll have that group of students. We also have an influx of students in fourth grade when the written language component becomes greater. And then we also have a large group of students that come in sixth grade when that transition to middle school is going to happen. So they might have been in an elementary school where the teachers were, you know, they were making accommodations for the student, but they weren't necessarily giving that remediation that's been needed. So there's still a lot of holes that need to be filled in. So then we take them and develop a program to try to fill in those holes.
Well, what would you recommend if we have a mom that has a preschooler now at home and she's thinking, oh, my goodness, he's just finally learned how to talk at 3, and now we're moving toward 4, and Kate and I, you know, really kind of are pre-academics when they're mm-hmm. not really ready for that yet, you know, when they mm-hmm. don't have the supportive language skills. What kinds of things do you recommend to moms of preschoolers when they already kind of know, oh, my goodness, you know, this potentially could be a problem for us?
Well, and I do it with my daughter, my own daughter, all the time, who is 4 years old. I really do try to make learning fun for her and, you know, really incorporate it into everything that we do throughout our day. So even though we don't sit down and really have a academic lesson on the alphabet, you know, we really do try to, you know, whether we're cooking together or we're outside playing, you know, we really try to bring in those natural things that can help us learn. So, oh, look, Macy, you know, the leaf is turning, you know, yellow. Okay, let's think about this. What season are we in? You know, because those aren't things that she's going to pick up just from conversation. I think a lot of other students are, but they're things that really have to be taught to some students and to some children. So I think really just to make every experience, as exhausting as it really can be, to make every experience a learning experience. You know, just driving down the road, you know, having dinner, bath time, every time that you are interacting with your child really can be a learning experience.
That's what we talk about every hour that we're on the air, huh, Kate?
And it can be exhausting at times.
It is. It really is. But it's just so, so important. And, you know, I let things go. I know I do. But I think we all just really get tired sometimes. But I really do think it's important. You know, pepperonis are round. Okay. You know, it's like, okay, Mom, enough. But you really do have to make it fun. So
we do get to make it fun thing because we work with 0 to 3-year-olds. And if we're not fun, they run or cry or hit us. So we believe in making it fun because we know that's the only way they're going to take it. As they get older, they get usually a little better at being force-fed. But 0 to 3, it's either fun or it's done. So
I remember Laura, I think, bringing in a lot of food for therapy.
Well, we are not above bribery with any kind of junk food that works. That's definitely part of our regimen, no doubt about it.
Well, it totally worked, didn't it, Ashley?
It did, and she is doing great, yes.
So she had a few more Cheetos than she would have. It really didn't matter in the end, did it? She's going to get them eventually.
Yeah, I don't think we said that I saw your daughter briefly when she was kind of a late talker, and we got her going speech-wise, and you said Macy's 4 now?
She is 4, and, you know, things are still difficult for her, but she's doing a great job, and I think just from what I learned from you, Laura, I think that's the great thing about First Steps is that the parents are learning from the therapist so much that I feel like I'm a much better mom in how I really do work with her on just, you know, those everyday skills. And now I have an 18-month-old that we're kind of going through the same thing, and she's not picking up on things. And so we're just really having to work hard. You know, there's not a minute to rest, but it's worth it. And, you know, if you do,
I'm sure it didn't hurt that you happened to be the administrator for a school that...
But, you know, really, though, even though you kind of get into your own little world. So even though, you know, the kids that I work with are K through 8, mm-hmm. and so I know exactly what I'm looking for that kindergarten student. I know exactly what I'm looking for that 8th grade student. But when you're talking about a 2-year-old a lot of times, that's really, I don't have a lot of exposure. So it does help whenever you have someone to really guide you and to help you, because you can read all you want, the articles and everything, but until you see somebody else do it, it starts to click when you actually see someone else doing it.
Right. Well, I wonder about Meredith Dunn specifically, like how, if you could, and this may be difficult to do because it sounds like your program is very much focused on meeting each individual student's personal needs,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, but, you know, just in contrast to what I know to be kind of typical for the public schools here, and I suspect it's fairly typical nationwide, is, you know, you have one teacher and 25 students and maybe an aide.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, I don't know at what point, I know my kids in public school went as high as 29 or 30 kids.
And I actually have been touring schools for kindergarten, and I think that's probably what it is.
Is
right
that
now
what it
too.
Is?
Uh-huh.
About 30 kids, and then they
mm-hmm.
have an aide, and you know, they may or may not have another person in there at some point. But so what's your typical classroom look like? How is, you know, just if you will, you know, is there, what's the ratio of student to teacher and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. And it does depend on the grade level, but we do not have any more than a 1-to-7 ratio.
Okay.
Wow.
So, yeah, like in 7th and 8th grade where we're going to have the largest numbers, we don't have any more than 14 students in a class. And we have a teacher and an instructional assistant. And when I say an instructional assistant, that is exactly what that person acts as. It's not someone that just does clerical work and grades papers and makes copies. It is actually someone that has been trained and knows the student, knows the nature of a learning disability, and actually really does help that teacher with instruction. So we have a lot of small groups. Like right now we have 200 kids enrolled in school, and we have 52 staff members. So, you know, we just really, we do a lot of pull-out. We have some reading groups that are one-on-one. Like right now I take a reading group. I take 2 7th grade boys for 45 minutes a day, and it's just the two of them and me. So we really do, with the small group size in the small, you know, the teachers that we have, it really is nice because we are able to look at those students in groups. So what we do is we just sit there all summer long and look at the kids as they come in and just spend days and days saying, okay, this is the profile of this student. He'll go with this group. And, you know, like right now we have 18 different math groups. So they move around all day long. They're pulled when they need to be pulled. But we, you know, we really do try to tailor it to the student. So, like in, let's see, I'm trying to think of like our kindergarten, second grade class, we have 10 students with 2 teachers in that classroom. So the ratio is 1-to-5 in there. But a lot of times with our kindergarten, first and second grades, those kids are going to be a little bit more needy, of course.
Right.
Emotionally, you know, even just, you know, taking bathroom breaks and things like that, it's a lot more involved at that level than it is at 7th and 8th grade. So we keep our classroom smaller at that level. But it is nice because we are such a small school that everyone knows the students. We know the needs. So if there is a student even in the hallway we really make a conscious effort of everyone knowing what's going on within the school. So, you know, it's almost just like one big family because, you know, we're all kind of pulling and reaching and trying to help each other as we can.
Right.
Go ahead, Laura.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we also have a social worker and an art therapist on staff that pulls students as well. So, you know, it's just everyone's always in a small group. You know, it's not like that traditional classroom that you see, okay, we have 30 kids in the class and they travel throughout the day together. You know, everyone's getting what they need at different places.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and, you know,
and I have a former little client whose brother goes to Meredith Dunn. I'm not sure if he still goes, but they just raved about how much individual attention he got and what a difference that kind of specialized instruction meant for him because he was in a different school and certainly having some issues. And I think he was a kid that didn't have those red flags as a toddler or as a preschooler, and
mm-hmm.
that was a little bit of a surprise for his mom. You know, and I have that parental background, too, with our oldest son who really struggled to learn how to read and had some sensory issues and that kind of thing. And we didn't do Meredith Dunn School, but we did do the DePaul School.
Uh-huh.
And just the focus and the specialized training that the parents know that they're getting through teachers with the,
mm-hmm.
the individual attention for kids, that's such a relief to so
mm-hmm.
many parents because they feel like, gosh, finally.
Yeah, and Louisville is so lucky because, you know, Meredith Dunn is here, and then we also have the DePaul School, which is located over in the Highlands, and then the Summit School also works with kids with learning disabilities, and they're over in Middletown. So many cities do not have any options as far as that goes, but we're really lucky as a community to have so many options. You know, we have people, and I know this is probably true for other schools, that drive from Elizabethtown, that drive from Bardstown. We've had some
yeah.
people relocate. So, you know, it's just it's a gift to the city for us to be able to have different options because, you know, me growing up in a small town, if you learn some type of way that people aren't exposed to, well, then you know what, you're just going to struggle.
Right.
So it's nice. It's nice. Unfortunately, there is tuition involved, you know, but we do have tuition assistance. But that's just the reality of it, that's what it takes to run an independent school.
Right.
But, you know, we really do try to work with parents and, you know, the financial needs. We also offer after-school tutoring for students that may not be able to come to school here, you know, during the day, but just need a little bit of help after. So we do run after-school tutoring sessions as well to kind of give that additional support.
Oh, that's great. And that is good.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds good. And so those are for kindergarten and above, that same K-8?
Yes, yes. And actually, yeah. we work with a lot of high school students as well, just giving them study skills and,
right.
You know, things like that. But I think one thing that makes us unique from a lot of other schools is we have a program, and it's SOS, and Kathy Beam, our head of school, and I developed this whenever we started 7 years ago. The first S stands for self-advocacy. So we really do try to teach students from the minute they walk in the door the way they learn, and for them to be able to talk about it, for them not to be ashamed of the way they learn, to be able to ask questions and to really be advocates for themselves when they need it. So for them to really understand what's going on in their brain and for them to know, okay, well, I'm having trouble today because I didn't eat breakfast. So, you know, and for them to be able
right.
to read their bodies and read their brains and understand themselves. And it goes on up into eighth grade where we're teaching the students, okay, this is actually what your brain looks like. This is how your brain is working. And for them to understand what's going on and, you know, why they learn the way they learn, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and really, you know, demystify them for that part. The O stands for organization. So we really do put a huge, huge emphasis on teaching the students to be organized. We have a very direct method on how they organize their binders. We do locker checks. We teach them how to organize their desk. We teach them how to set up a place at home, to study. We teach them how to plan for long-term projects. So organization is just a huge, huge piece of the puzzle here at Meredith Dunn. And then the last S stands for strategy building. So we actually teach them strategies for memory. We teach them strategies for processing, for auditory discrimination. Our students know those words. So if you say, okay, I have difficulty with auditory discrimination, this is how I'm going to help myself with it. Our students understand that language because they've been taught it, and they know that that might be difficult for them or easy for them, and they know what to do about it. So I think that's just a really important part of Meredith Dunn, and it's a program that we're really, really proud of. And we see the kids, it's just interesting because the kids will say, well, today I'm having trouble with impulse control, and this is the way I'm going to handle it. So, you know, it's just, it's really interesting because they really
Ashley,
know.
Do you take college students?
Sometimes we're like, okay.
It's not too late for my personal family. I have a college student who could definitely use your help.
Well, it's funny because we're like, okay, that person has been too demystified because it's funny because we, one of our students that was in eighth grade just went for his checkup, you know, for his regular doctor checkup, and his pediatrician asked him, so why do you go to Meredith Dunn? And he seriously answered, and the pediatrician called us to tell us this because he was so overwhelmed with the answer. He said, I have written language difficulties, so my teacher is teaching me the writing process because I have trouble putting my thoughts onto paper. So, you know, they really do. They start to understand it, and they know what they need, and they're not ashamed to admit, okay, this is hard for me, you know, because so many of them have been in an environment where they don't want to read out loud. They're embarrassed. You know, they have just emotionally been unsuccessful, academically been unsuccessful, and they're finally somewhere where it's okay to let their guard down because they're around kids that are just like them, and teachers have finally understand them.
Oh, Ashley, so. That's so good. And what a great thing to be able to teach kids from an early age. This is a difference in me compared to other kids, but that's okay, and I can talk about it, and I can explain myself to the point that you understand what I'm going through so that they don't have to feel like they're alone in that whole process.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a fine line because we don't want it to ever be a crutch. But
right.
It is good to understand, okay, well, you know, everyone is different, but this
right.
is just the way that I'm different. So it is. It's a good thing.
So what would you suggest if there are we have listeners all through the country and through even in other parts of the world, when I look
mm-hmm.
at where our listeners come from moms, if they are thinking, okay, I've got this, you know, younger preschooler about to go to kindergarten, I'm not sure that public school is going to work for him, what are ways and things that they can, criteria they can use to be able to judge what's going to be a good match for them, and how can they find schools that would be similar to Meredith Dunn in their areas? What do you suggest about that?
That's a great question, and actually I love the website, and I hate just to direct people, you know, immediately to a website, but I love the website, LD Online, and they give a great, you know, they really lay out a lot of the schools and a lot of things to check for as far as those, you know, those skills go and what to look for. I think the best thing to do is just really meet with the teachers, meet with the admissions directors, and really look at, you know, okay, what is typical? Go into those classrooms and observe and see, you know, observe in that kindergarten class and really visualize, do you see your student there? Do you see your child there? Can you see your child fitting in there? And if not, then ask yourself the question, okay, what do I need to do to get things in place to find, you know, an environment that does work with them? And if you know that you're going to be in a public school, you know, make the contacts, find out what you need to do, call the system, and, you know, get your child evaluated if that's what needs to be done. But be a real advocate for your child and really speak up and be sure that your child is getting exactly what he or she needs. Because I think a lot of times in a system that's big, and, you know, it nothing against any type of public or, you know, large or private system, but things get overlooked when it's a big system. So I think that you yourself have to be the best advocate for your child. And also talk to your pediatrician because I think that they're a good resource as well.
Well, okay, give us that website again, Ashley.
LDonline.org.
Okay, great.
And then I also...
Sounds like it could be helpful for a lot of
people. Yes, and also two others, just since we're talking about websites, that two others that I really like... allkindsofminds.org, and then Schwab Learning. www.charlesbaker.org, which I think it will take you to another website because it's just changed. But it was developed by Charles Schwab, who also had learning disabilities, which is a great foundation for people with learning disabilities.
That's great. I'm going to put your recommendations for those websites on my website today under this post about the podcast. So any mom or therapist, if you're listening and need those, you can check that out at teachmetotalk.com. I don't have a problem recommending websites, Ashley.
Okay. Well, and I know that there are other things, but it's like, you know, I just hate whenever you're like, well, read this book or look at this website. You know, tell me now what to do.
Well, websites are better than a full book. At least
you're exactly right.
Concise, quick, you know, basic,
you know, there are a lot of, yeah, and there are a lot, is the parentcenter.com, you know, like I get weekly updates on, you know, your child is 18 months, you know, 3 weeks, this is what your child should be doing. And a lot of times that's just enough to freak you out, but at least you know what to look for.
Right.
So.
And with, you know, our population, Laura and I see it happening routinely so often, or not infrequently anyway, we see that kids, even at 2, do end up with kind of a negative label, you know, because parents and not infrequently even therapists say it's behavioral. He's choosing to be bad, you know, to not follow the rules, to not respond to commands, to not talk.
He's choosing not to talk. Yeah.
Choosing. He could. He just won't. And, you know, I think over time, if a child isn't identified and there isn't really some intervention that's positive at some point, it would be very easy for these kids as they get older to get that label in a school system where they're one of 30 kids. And the behavioral manifestation of their learning difference is that they are a behavioral problem because they're frustrated, they're lost, they have a negative reputation with teachers. You know, I mean, there would be a lot of potential negative fallout from not really recognizing, really, there's an underlying problem.
Well, and a lot of times it is a lot easier to be considered the class clown than to be considered, you know, stupid or dumb, the way other kids may, you know, may label you. You know, being the class clown is nothing compared to that.
Right.
So,
parents ask me this all the time, Ashley, what age is it, do you think, when kids start to kind of notice that another kid is different, that another kid might learn differently, might act differently? What do you think about that? Because I usually tell parents, oh, that doesn't happen until second or third grade. Do you think
and
that
that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say third grade. Third grade. You know, I think some students might pick up on it in second grade. For kindergarten and first grade, I just don't see it at all.
I don't either. And parents ask me about that. They get really concerned about that for preschool, and that might be a reason that sometimes parents say to me, and Kate, I bet you've heard this too, I'm not ready for him to go to preschool yet because I don't want other kids to make fun of him.
Oh, God.
And I say, that does not happen until those kids are in second or third grade. And if you limit your child's social experiences for fear that he is going to be rejected on some level, until you feel like he's over it, he may not have a friend until he's 25. You know, you have got to start early with those kinds of things.
I really do. I think around third grade, they really start to see, and you know, children are more resilient than we give them credit for. You know, a lot of times they are so accepting. And, you know, we see them helping each other. We have a student here that, you know, has had some surgeries with his eyes. And, you know, those kids just pick up and just help him right along everywhere. And, you know, that's talking about a third, fifth grade student. So third, fourth grade students. So, you know, I just think we've got to give the kids enough credit that they'll be accepting. Not that those kids don't eventually get bullied, but you know, you have to take the chance. You really do.
Yeah, and not that early on. Not usually in preschool, kindergarten is not when that happens, in my opinion.
Oh, and again, I have never seen it in kindergarten or first grade in all of my years of, being in school. So yes, I do agree. Get them in a preschool program.
We also sometimes hear parents, you know, worry about a child having a label in the school system because then they feel like teachers will treat them and see them differently. And you know, I always kind of think, well, maybe the label or some sort of official feedback on that is better than having them be the bad one or the dumb one or the, you know, the difficult one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because I think, well, teachers are going to have their opinions.
Right.
That's what I think. And I think I'd rather have a teacher have the correct opinion and the correct diagnosis rather than try to come up with one on her own.
Exactly. And especially a teacher that doesn't have any experience.
And
you know, in that area. Not any experience, but isn't used to those kids with those differences. So, and you know, we kind of see, because we also do diagnostic testing here, and I think we see two different types of parents. We see parents that come in that want us to tell them, okay, everything's okay, you know, and then we also see parents that come in and celebrate the label because they're like, finally, we have a reason for all of this. Okay, now that we know what's wrong, how can we make it better? You know, so we really see two completely different reactions to the outcome of testing.
Right. And so what do you recommend for a parent, for a mom who might be saying, oh, I don't want to, you know, that's kind of in denial, that's really struggling with this whole thing. You know, you say what you tell those parents, and I'll kind of give you my take on that.
Well, I hope it's the same.
I hope so, too.
No, and I would just say embrace the
difference. Both agree on third grade, so you're doing pretty well so far.
I would just say, you know, embrace the difference and just try to make it work for you. You can't be afraid of that label because, you know what, whether it's auditory processing or whatever it is, that individual is going to have to live with that forever probably. So let's, you know, confront it head on and let's really figure out what we're going to do about it. And
that's,
I think, too, you know, you have to teach your kids to be strong, and you have to teach your kids that, you know, that this is okay, this is an obstacle, yes, but life is about obstacles, you know, whether it be educational or not educational. You know, everyone's not going to make the football team, and we have to overcome those obstacles, and we have to figure out, okay, what are we going to do about it? Come up with a plan as a family, too.
And I tell parents, too, you know, parents that are maybe just petrified of hearing autism or something, and I'll say, okay, go in the bathroom, look in the mirror, say it 50 times in a row, close the door, scream, whatever you need to do, but you got to move past it so that you get to the point that you can help your kid and be your child's best advocate, and then be looking for opportunities and looking for ways, like you said, in everyday routines that you can make their lives better and teach them the things they need to know. Mm-hmm. And being afraid and being in denial, all those things are very expected for parents who get that kind of news. And I'm talking about from anything from late talker to autism to, like you mentioned, auditory processing disorder, reading disabilities, whatever. You got to get to the point that you get over it enough so that it's not all about you and so that you focus that energy in a positive way toward helping your kid get better.
Right, and I do think, you know, whenever you do plan to have a family, this isn't what you envision for your child. You don't envision your child having autism. You don't envision your child.
We were all going to have the perfect children, weren't we?
Yes. But, you know, I think once you get past that, and once you get past, okay, that was a dream, you know, let's talk about reality. And, you know, when parents come to us, we see so many parents that are just really heartbroken, you know, where they have been a part of, for example, a Catholic parish their entire lives, you know, and then their child can't go to school there. Or, you know, I mean, it just, they're
goes
leaving.
And fails and it's a disaster.
Exactly.
And
I could see
where that would happen.
And they are just, this isn't what they envisioned, and this isn't what the way they thought it would be, and it is hard, and they do mourn. But I think once you do take it and you embrace it and you conquer it, and, you know, you
figure out what works and start implementing, you can begin to feel better about the whole experience.
And just move on and come up with a plan.
Ashley, I'm guessing from what you say, and again, this is all very educational for me about Mira's Done, but it seems like one of your potential student, you know, a group of them, not to group or label, but it seems like you might get quite a few kids with ADHD.
We do. We do. Typically with that ADHD comes something else.
Right.
But we do. We have a lot of kids that do have that diagnosis of ADHD. And, you know, we work with the doctors. We work with whether the child's seeing a psychiatrist, a speech therapist. You know, we do all try to pull together as a team and come up with a plan. You know, what we don't like to see, because a lot of those kids that we think of as ADHD do come with some of those behaviors. So
right.
What we don't like to see in our classrooms is a student that does have some type of, you know, behavior problem that is overriding the learning problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
We really do like to be focused on, okay, this is a school where we teach people, we teach them, you know, and they are going to learn. And if there is a student in there that might be causing so many problems that they're not able to learn, then we have to come up with a plan on how to make this better. But we do. We have lots of students with ADHD. And I think that a lot of times, you know, you will see that, you know, some reading problems and things like that a lot of times do come along, unfortunately, with that label as well.
Right.
Right.
Usually doesn't necessarily appear in a vacuum. But it seems to me that when I've had kids, and typically they don't have that diagnosis, but sometimes, you know, I think could get that diagnosis as they age, or siblings of kids that I've worked with when they've been in the public schools, those kids seem to really, you know, just the very traditional sit and listen and absorb, and you're one of 30 bodies with one teacher at the front of the classroom really does not meet those kids' needs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they, so often I think, just a totally different approach to teaching them would probably be very, very beneficial, but that's not necessarily the way one individual in front of 30 bodies can do it, and they're not always, sometimes, you know, I think they fall victim to, he's just bad, he doesn't follow the rules, you
yes.
know.
And really he just needs to be engaged, or she needs to be engaged
mm-hmm.
more. And, you know, we have a lot of kids that, you know, well, and of course when you have 7 kids in your class and one teacher, it is a lot easier to engage all students
right,
and
right.
break them out into small groups and give them what they need to keep them interested. But we also give our students a lot of chance, a lot of opportunity for movement,
right.
which I feel like is a huge piece as well. We start each day with the smart moves routine where you do, you know, you're crossing the midline, you're working, which is also a wonderful website, smartmoves.com. But it's, you know, an action of movements that keep the student going. We do a lot of brain gym throughout the day. We have the Minds in Motion maze here. So if we see a student that is, you know, getting off task a little bit, maybe the instructional system will say, you know what, let's go do the maze. And so they can go through the maze where it, you know, works on the movement. It works on crossing that midline to get them back engaged. And a lot of times that's all they need.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can go back and they can refocus. So a lot of things that might have been problems in classes of 30 aren't even, we never even see the issue here. Just
right.
Because, you know, it's a much more learning-friendly environment. And nothing against that teacher that has those 30 kids, because, you know what, there's no way to do that
right.
a lot of times
right.
when you have.
They don't,
you know,
have the maze at your neighborhood.
Yeah. Exactly, and they don't.
The maze
have
is the kid doesn't sit in a seat and he goes under all the desks and chairs all over the room. And he gets a red light for that, doesn't he?
And he does not get his treasure at the end of the week. So.
Oh,
right.
Gosh.
Bad, bad, bad. Yeah, I mean,
kid.
I just. Okay, I'm going to ask because, again, for my own edification and knowledge, what, and I hope this isn't a touchy question, just how much ballpark does Meredith Dunn cost? I'm just wondering, like, okay, you know, if you were over income for any kind of assistance,
mm-hmm.
what would
mm-hmm.
it be?
If you just come and enroll and you do not, you know, meet the needs for any financial aid,
mm-hmm.
it is it's just over $10,000 a year for tuition.
Which to me, I mean, is a lot, but we did the public school system in grade school, middle school, and then did parochial high school, so
mm-hmm.
having paid for some years of education, you know, I guess if you have the money, if you're over income and you don't qualify for the tuition assistance, then
I don't know, to me, to have your child have a positive experience educationally speaking would be worth $10,000. But
it is, and I know that some families, I mean, it is just, you know, for I know for my family it would be a real struggle, but we have people that have grandparents that are helping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people do so many things. We have so many parents that are working second jobs just to get their child here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times it does break our heart. But, you know, unfortunately that is just the way it does have to be. And
well, you've got to pay for your staff and your
right.
building.
There's a reason
that,
I mean, 71
yeah.
isn't free.
Yes,
it
and
is,
we
yeah.
are definitely not in a luxurious building. I mean, we're in a very old building. We
where
really,
are you? I don't know. Where is your
school? We are actually in Hikes Point.
Okay.
We're right past the intersection section of Breckenridge Lane and Taylorsville Road. So, yeah. So
okay.
there's the McMahon Center and everything. We sit right there with that. So
I'm sure
so,
I wouldn't know it's there unless
too.
You were looking.
I didn't know it was there because I drive by there routinely and didn't know it. You know, I have had a few classmates of my kids over the years whose kids went to Meredith Dunn for
mm-hmm.
a year or two or three, and I never really fully understood exactly what it was. They, of course, had gone on back to the public school system and were kids who were having issues. They were doing well. But, you know, I guess if, particularly if you're thinking, ideally this is something you could do for a year or two or three and
mm-hmm.
get the process going and kind of know how to meet your kids' needs educationally, then you go back to the public school system
exactly.
and they have successes. So
right.
certainly
and
we're
our kids
struggling
come
for
out,
that.
Right, and they come out of eighth grade so prepared for high school. Our students go to a variety of different public schools. You know, for just from last year, we've got kids at Eastern, at Seneca, you know, the Bardstown area. But then we also have kids that go to Christian Academy. A lot of our boys go to Trinity. And the girls, you know, again, Christian Academy, Assumption, you know, they go everywhere, and they're really very
right.
successful. And what we find is that most of the time these kids that, you know, were almost practically non-readers in like maybe even third or fourth grade are coming out, and then they're on the academic track in high school. So, you know, it
That's
is.
Great.
It's just about, you know, finding out what they need and trying to meet them where they are. And I think in this day and time, you know, we are lucky enough to have such good resources. There are such good books out there. There's the Internet. People are just so much more knowledgeable about things like this, that it's not, you know, the bad word to say that you do have a learning disability. You know,
right.
people understand that it's out there and it's very common.
You know, and the pricing for parents, I tell them all the time, after you've paid for quality daycare, if both parents have worked, sometimes paying
mm-hmm.
school tuition, even when it's pricey like that, it's almost a discount.
You're right. It is.
You know, after you pay that, after you're kind of used to that. So
mm-hmm.
for parents that are thinking there's no way I can make that work, just look at what your outcome could be otherwise. So.
Well, and think about what you did pay just weekly at daycare
right.
or for, you know, child care, because
right.
It's probably more than tuition at Meredith Dunn.
Probably so. They just haven't thought about it.
I'm surprised
it's
not more, to be honest, because, you
yeah.
know, some of the public schools, I mean, the private schools here, not really the parochial grade schools, but
mm-hmm.
the even more private, more exclusive schools are that for just, I mean, I think they have smaller class sizes, but not that
right.
small, and they're not specially educated to treat kids with learning differences,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they get
right.
good
yeah.
teachers, and they're good, but so, you know, if it's KCD or Meredith Dunn, it's probably you're saving money, so.
Yeah. Exactly, and we really do try to make a point to keep our tuition dollars down as low as possible. We have a wonderful development director that, you know, almost all of our resources are paid through grants. The community is so generous with us in giving us grants to pay for our materials. I mean, we really just have the best of the best as far as textbooks and technology goes, just because the city of Louisville has been so generous and the people in Louisville. But it really is our goal and our mission to try to keep our tuition dollars down, because we don't serve an elite community. You know,
right.
even though you think, okay, it's $10,000 to go to school here, if you look at our students, it isn't an elite group of families. I mean, we are just all very diverse and very common and just all want the best for our kids.
Yeah. Okay, I can hear your bell ringing, Ashley. You need to go.
Well, it's time for dismissal, so it's going to get a little loud.
Hey, real quick, you mentioned books. What books do you recommend as resources for parents, or young kids? Books
young,
for parents. Uh-huh.
For young kids. Oh, gosh. Well, I just
not
all – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, for parents whose children maybe are coming in and they're saying, what books can we read about learning
mm-hmm.
differences?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, what do you recommend there?
Well, I love all of the Mel Levine books. I really do. You know, the
I am not familiar with that name. You gave us credit for knowing that was – I was thinking, I'm not going to go public, but I'm not familiar with that. So I guess I've just outed myself. I'm not familiar with that name.
Well,
he just been trained on that?
I'm sorry?
Is that the program that you've just been trained
well,
on?
Well, yes, and he's just kind of the founder and the pediatrician that was behind the All Kinds of Minds Institute.
Okay.
And actually, All Kinds of Minds, if you go to their website, they have actually a lot of children's books that they'll recommend as well.
Okay.
I actually love the book. It's called All Kinds of Minds, and that book is written for a second, third, maybe even a fourth grade student, and what it does is it breaks different learning styles down into chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, chapter one is about Eddie, and keep in mind this is a children's book, and
okay.
it's written about Eddie who, gosh, Eddie always has trouble paying attention. Eddie can put anything together. He fixes everybody's bicycle in the neighborhood, but he just cannot pay attention. And then it goes on to
I
tell
believe
him,
I've met Eddie when he was two.
In every chapter, Sonia has, you know, Sonia just can't remember anything, and this is what
Aww.
She does to help herself. So anyway, you know, it goes on and it tells, you know, it tells a story about each child. So I just think, you know, I think his books are very hard to read sometimes, but gosh, they're just so good. And I think Rick LaVoy is a great author as well. I love all of his stuff too. So
spell his
I think
last name, Rick.
LaVoy. It's LAVOI, and I believe there's an E at the end.
Okay.
And he has a DVD that is actually wonderful. It's called Fat City, and FAT is an acronym, and I cannot think of what it is an acronym for right now, but it's FAT City, and it's a DVD, and it is just wonderful about explaining kids that learn differently and the problems that they have in everyday life.
Well, that is great, and I'm going to put that on the website as well
okay.
that anybody can look for that resource.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Ashley.
Some of those
Ashley.
Would be helpful for us to have just for
yeah.
our own knowledge and to be able to kind of talk to parents about, because sometimes I'm kind of at a loss
mm-hmm.
to how to really explain why is it that your child doesn't remember this or why is it
right.
that your child needs to be told five times before
right.
he processes or, you know what I mean, I don't always have the words.
Well, and I know I keep going back to that All Kinds of Minds website, but there is just an awesome parents corner in that website that really answers a lot of questions and breaks things down in a very parent-friendly way. So,
well, I'm definitely going to that
side.
Website.
I'm going to that one, too. And listen,
it's
you
one
know,
of my
so
favorite.
Many well, parents that we work with, Ashley, sometimes they'll think, oh, my gosh, we finally got them to talk at 3. Now it's just we're home free. And sometimes I just want to say, oh, my gosh, you're
oh
just God. Starting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's I want to celebrate their successes with them, but at the same time, you know, I know in my heart of hearts.
Talking. And sometimes that's the case. Once they're
sometimes
talking,
it
they
is.
Do great.
Yeah.
And other times, once they're talking, like you said, Laura, the process has just begun, and there are going
right.
to be quite a few more hurdles as they go along
mm-hmm.
right.
in school age. You know, stuff.
And that's not to say they won't get there. It's just that sometimes you're just going to have to pull up those bootstraps and work hard till they leave your house. And
exactly.
That's, you know,
and
they're grown.
Maybe.
yeah. That's been the experience that I've had, certainly.
Hey,
so
we do
yeah.
lots of testing on adults. So actually, we work with
do you?
Yes, and
college age. Ding, ding, ding.
Well, and actually, I'll just put this plug in really quickly, and then I really do have to go to dismissal. We actually, last year we were contracted through University of Louisville, but we're not actually contracted through them anymore, so I can't say we're a part of University of Louisville, but we work with the University of Louisville athletes. And actually, a former Meredith Dunn teacher now is the academic coordinator for all the athletes over at U of L, our former eighth grade teacher, and uses the same reading program we use with the U of L athletes. So, you know, a lot of times you are in college when you realize it. So, you know, it's not over. So anyway, you know, a lot of times that helps us with our kids whenever we're like, okay, this is the reading program we use, and guess what? You know, the basketball players and the football players, they're using this too. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Right.
So anyway, sometimes
we're
going to
let you go.
Okay. Yes, people are going to be knocking on my door soon.
It was easy to go an hour, though, wasn't it?
It was.
You were great. You did a great job.
Thank you so much, Ashley. We appreciate it so much. And I'm going to call you later so we can catch up.
Okay. Thanks so much. It was nice to meet you, Kate.
You may hear from me later.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Isn't she darling?
Oh, yes.
I just love her. I just love her. And I knew she was going to be great with all of her suggestions and just in how she talks about learning differences. Don't you feel comforted in just knowing that there are academic people out there that we're sending our little guys to? That really understand and really get them and really spend their whole lives figuring out how can I teach this kid so that he reaches his maximum potential.
Right. Really, I honestly didn't know exactly what Meredith Dunn was, you know, and it does. I've certainly worked with kids that I think, oh, if only they could go there and I'll be.
Right.
You know, I might drop that name a time or two. So
I know. I think it's a great resource for here in Louisville, but I hope that moms that are listening throughout the country, you know, you can find places like this, too. You just have to do your homework. So I'm going to list all of those websites that she recommended today on kind of as a comment listed on the bottom of the podcast link for today. So you can find that.
One thing we didn't ask her, Laura, was I wonder if they ever get – I mean, she said they have kids traveling from E-Town, which is 45 minutes to an hour away. I wonder if they do – you know, just kind of individual testing for kids who aren't
She said they did diagnostic services, and I think that you can probably make an appointment if you're out of state.
Yeah, because
and
it would
have,
be so good for people. Because if you really are really rural, you know, I could see where in eastern Kentucky or rural any place, you know, you're quite a ways from a metropolitan area and you're not going to have these specialized places, but even if you went and got the information about what is his learning style, what would be an effective approach to address this,
right?
And then you could take that back to your public school system and, you know, help them to troubleshoot. Because I, you know, in theory, the public school systems, they suggest or like to think or say that they tailor their individual program to each child with, you know, who has special needs. But sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, if you can get a lot of these strategies written into their IEP
mm-hmm.
and your resource teacher that's dedicated to kind of overseeing their case and their management of their academic time and their additional resources has access to that information and certainly knows, okay, from this test, I know about this kid that he's got an auditory processing disorder, so that means these are the kinds of strategies and supports that he's going to need to be successful in his second grade classroom.
Right.
So
but parents would have to know that. You know what I mean?
Right.
They would
have
to know.
Diagnostic testing from an independent source could really be a benefit to lots of parents, and there are families, you know, who are going to be willing to do that and who need to do that, you know, regardless if you're paying out of pocket for that. You know, oh, well, you pay out of pocket for vacation, too. You know,
mm-hmm.
we somehow manage to feed and clothe our children and even do things that are fancy extras. You know,
right.
I can't imagine a better way to spend your money than being able to help them academically and educationally. And sometimes it is just those getting those strategies started from the very beginning of their academic careers, which really prevents so much of that negativity and that kind of mislabeling like we were talking about earlier. So I think it would be money well spent, money
right.
and time well spent.
Maybe that needs to be my mantra, better properly labeled than mislabeled.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of
absolutely.
Like, oh, I prefer that. I mean, I do get the whole, we joked about all of us thinking we were going to have the perfect kids. None of us plan it that way, you know, but and it
right.
is difficult to come to terms with it and move beyond just being devastated by it. You
right.
know, or discouraged, or
But you've got to get past that, because a devastated parent really isn't going to be as beneficial to that kid. I mean,
right.
It hurts, and yeah, you may cry yourself to sleep every night for a long, 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 long time, but you've got to get past that to the point where you're taking action and where you decide, you know, I'm going to make the difference in my kid's life here, because he's
right.
mine, and he's not like we thought he was going to be, but he's still mine, and this
mm-hmm.
is what I have to do to make it
and
better.
And I love him, and he's perfect, or she's perfect to me, but, yeah, because, you know, when she's talking about the SOS, you know, they teach them to be self-advocates. Well, I think more often than not, if the parent doesn't advocate for the child doesn't really get an opportunity to be a self-advocate. You know what I mean? They have to be
exactly.
in that environment before they're able to learn to do that. So,
you know, and that is one of the things, you know, our oldest son, and I've shared this on here before, has a reading disability and some sensory issues and stuff, and he learned really by middle school to really talk to teachers about what he needed and exactly what the problems were. And I think that makes so much difference, and it made a big difference in his self-esteem, because he felt more in control
mm-hmm.
and more self-aware is not a good word, but he just felt like, okay, I'm going to put it out here on the table and just tell you up front what my issue is and what help I need and what's going to help me be able to complete this assignment or end up with an A instead of a C, or, you know, whatever the challenge was. I do think it helps when people can kind of openly and honestly and intelligently discuss what's going on with them.
Of course, part of that was you addressed early on by sending him to a specialized school to
right.
figure that whole thing out. So then he got it, and then as he
right.
got older, he was able to do the self-advocacy thing. But anyway,
right, and we
she
always
was wonderful.
Talk to him.
I really liked talking to her and learning from her. And I'm going to visit her website because they sound cool.
They do
Not
sound
her
great.
Website, but the ones she talked about.
The ones she recommended. And I'm going to get those on today at teachmetotalk.com on our little podcast link, and you can see those. And we've way exceeded our hour once again, but I knew she was going to be a great guest. And Ashley, if you're listening to this afterwards, thank you, thank you, thank you. You were wonderful.
She was great. Loved it. Okay, talk to you later.
Okay, we'll be back next week.
So much
week.
For Intervention Insights.
We'll do that next time.
Maybe next week we'll get back to that.
We will.
Okay,
okay.
Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.